Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
On What's Next today, our visiting guest, or returning guest for us, Morgan Williams Bryant with us. Morgan, though, is the CEO of Leadership Buffalo. Actually, I think you may have been taking the position when you were here last.
Yes.
But it's great to have you back with us.
It's great to be back, Jay.
Yeah, you know, you bring great energy to our conversation, so I'm most certainly looking forward to talking about this, because right off the bat here, Leadership Buffalo, very quickly, it seems like you're putting your imprint, you and your team are putting an imprint on Leadership Buffalo and trying to take it to the next level. What's happening?
Absolutely. So I started December 4th, hit the ground running, haven't stopped since then. But it's been a great ride. I do have a phenomenal team that I'm working with now. But what we've done, the first 6 months, what I did was really just focus internally. You know, what is it that the organization internally need? Kind of setting some structures in place, standard operating procedures, and then just learning the basic operations. I was involved in a program in 2017. I served on the board since 2018. But when you're coming in and now, you know, you're leading the organization, you're looking at it from a different lens. So it really gave me an opportunity to kind of dive into the weeds, you know, to really learn the operations, the programs, and then to see some of the areas that, you know, some of the things we want to do differently, some of the things that we want to enhance, and then listening to the community. So the second half, what I did was contract out to Clementine Gold Group and then also Talent Rise. We wanted to make sure that we had third-party organizations really leading focus groups with the community, our stakeholders, our sponsors, to really listen to what it is that they needed.
What did you hear from the focus groups? I'm curious.
You know, overwhelmingly, and we'll talk about it a lot at the State of LB in February, but overwhelmingly, the number one thing that people wanted was more leadership development infused into our program. You look at how the workforce has changed just a small period of over the pandemic. You know, there's also been a generational shift that we've been looking at in the workforce in the past couple of years. And people want to be equipped with more leadership skills. And then they want to be brought up to date. You know, how do I deal with the changes that we have experienced? And we may not be going to what was pre-pandemic or, you know, post this generational shift that's happened. So the team and I really took a hard look at that, you know, talking to our consultants. And one thing that I didn't want to do when I started is come in and say, this is just all my vision. That, you know, that's for me, that's not the way I lead. You know, this is a community oriented program. We have a lot of people that pay and companies that invest in us. And we want to make sure that we're hitting the needs that they truly want and need to grow the leaders in their company. I think it's very important for companies and organizations to invest in their employees. When you invest in your employees will work so much harder for you. They feel appreciated, and the talents and skills that you hired them for, I feel like you'll see them flourish even more. So we really wanted to make sure that we were listening to the community's voice, but also incorporating what the community said. And so I'm so excited to say that we just recently launched our LBU, which is Leadership Buffalo University program, where we will be infusing more leadership development into the current curriculum that we have. One of the things things that people also talked about was the impact of the day sessions where we actually, going to organizations, visiting places in Buffalo, and they're actually getting to experience what other organizations, what their colleagues are doing. The one thing I say that's unique about Leadership Buffalo is there's no other program or organization that gives you an opportunity to pause during your workday and go visit and see what someone else is doing in a completely different sector.
Right. And let's break that down just a little bit, just because I know I have a little bit of understanding how this type of effort works, but I'm not sure everybody does. But you're saying you're sponsoring companies. But basically what they do, and not only are they investing in you, but now they're, like you said, investing in one of their employees that they think could be a leader.
Absolutely.
And every week or every month or whatever, there's a day set aside. They get off from work and they go to these events, right?
Correct. So it's happening during their workday where employers are saying, yes, you know, we sign on to this program and it's going to be a part of your workday. And so each month there's a different day session that's a different theme. The first theme when we come off of our opening retreat in January is hunger and poverty. Okay. We know that Buffalo is the third poorest city in New York State. And so we're really highlighting some of the issues and concerns that people are going through on a daily basis. And it really gives leaders in this community a bird's eye, hands-on view that hunger and poverty don't always look like what you think it should look like. It really could be the executive sitting next to you because you never know someone's financial circumstances, what they have dealt with, whether someone has gotten sick, medical bills, things like that. They could be one check away from needing some of these services as well. So it really gives you an idea of what people in that field, nonprofit organizations usually are targeting that, are working with, giving you information and statistics on who that person is and who it could be, what that person looks like, which is often different than what we normally think. But it also gives you a really good understanding and feel good to see the great work that's happening in this community. You have organizations that we partner with, like Upward Design for Life with Dion Williamson, who founded it. And she's basically running this organization by herself along with volunteers. And what she's doing is helping single moms furnish their homes. Like, finally, they were able to get an apartment that they can afford on their own, but they may not now have the means to furnish the apartment. So she's working with various companies, individuals, organizations that's pouring into it.
Is the idea then, expand on it, because you went through that, not only you were setting up this training, but you went through training. It's different than it was back in 2017, of course. It's evolved. That when you see what someone like Dion is doing, is there an understanding of how to take on a challenge and try to find solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're working as a banker, when you're working, you know, at National Grid and National Fuel, you're really focused on your work.
Of course.
You're focused on your world, your career, the things that interest you and what you signed up for. You're really not thinking about what's happening around you during your workday, when really what's happening around you at your workday could be impacting your workday. Why is your coworker showing up to work late? Maybe they have to take transportation or something has happened with their family that you may not have considered before. But also, it gives you an opportunity to bring back to your company, here's some of the things that we can get involved in to be more involved in the community, to help some of these issues, some of the concerns, things that people are going through, and just to do good work. Because it's not always about issues and concerns that we're addressing. It's really to show how we can partner more in this community. We say Buffalo is the city of good neighbors, and it gives you an idea or a door to expand that opportunity to partner with some of those organizations. Organizations and passion projects.
You said that you'll start off with a retreat.
Yes.
So what goes into the retreat?
The opening retreat. So we have an opening and closing retreat. The opening retreat usually takes place in January and closing retreat in November. And this is really the first initial bonding experience that you have. have, because you're bringing people together from all walks of life, from all different careers, whether it's public, private, nonprofit, small business owners, and you're really getting to know each other. So we're giving you an opportunity to take some assessments, you know, whether it's DISC assessment, really understanding your behaviors, other people's behaviors, kind of giving you an overview of leadership development and what you're going to experience with the community, also the civic engagement. We have some team building activities, and it's really just to unite the class, bring the class together, rising leaders, which is that emerging leader population, those that are just stepping into their career, their first leadership roles. And then you have class experience, which is more of an experienced leader, executive level, where, you know, they've been in a couple of positions and now, you know, they're leading in this area. So you're bringing both groups together, allowing them to get to know each other, create a bond, and then let them know what they're in store for the year. So it's a day and a half retreat that we spend a night and then just go through full days worth of activities, whether it's civic engagement, leadership development, or just good old team building.
How about for you? Again, we're kind of comparing two different things from 2017 to 2024, but that bond, did you establish bonds that are still lasting?
Absolutely. So when I started this year, the program was already preset. So I started in December. The program starts in January. So this year was really an opportunity for me to just take a step back and learn and to see, to take notes, to read our surveys, to talk to people and see what was going on. So 2025 is really a year where my team and I will really be putting a stamp on what's next or the next chapter. LB has a great foundation over the last 37 years. We were founded in 1987. That was established. And now what we're doing is building upon that. So 2025 is really where you'll start to see an imprint of some of the new things that we're going to implement, like LBU. And I said Leadership Buffalo University, but it's also a spin. The U is a spin on you as the leader. Mm. You know, more self-awareness, emotional intelligence, really focusing on your skills and personal growth and development as well. So 2017, absolutely, I've created some really good bonds,
right,
relationships, and even outside of, because what LB provides is a network of people. You know, we have an elite network of over 4,000 individuals that have gone through this program that you can pick
up.
Do
you feel free, like, to call up some of
your old? Yeah? I do. Now, you know, 2017 clearly was the best class. But we have a lot of other great classes that came before and after as well. And, you know, I do want to shout out the class of 99 because they celebrated their 25th anniversary this year. And they invited Kendra Brim, who is our vice president of program and organizational development, and I out to their gathering. And to see that they're still bonding, meeting and doing great things in the community, and to invite us out to experience that with them and bond with them was really good. So you have groups like that, classes like that, that are still getting together and bonding. And then you have those that are sporadically getting together based on what's going on in their lives. So absolutely, it was impactful to me.
What about confidence? I'm curious about that. I mean, you're looking for an emerging leader. I'm sure when people are looking inside their organizations, who might be the best candidate for this year's class? But is confidence something that's needed to get in here to flourish in this in these opportunities at LBU, or is it something that maybe comes along with it?
I think it's a combination of both, because you have those that are experienced, they've experienced life. Life in a lot of different ways. And so their confidence may be a little bit higher because they have gone through and they know how to get through life. And then you have those that are just stepping into their careers and, you know, they may be a little bit more shy. You know, a lot of people look at introverts like, oh, they're shy. And, you know, really, they just need their space. So it really depends where you are. But we're really open for everyone. Mm-hmm. We hope as you're going through this program that your confidence continues to grow. But we're really looking and accepting of the individual that's coming in. So what you really need to thrive in this program is the will to do it. You want to be a part of it. You want to grow. You want to be more civically engaged. You want to understand what's going on in Buffalo. So if you have the willpower and a passion, then this program is for you.
You did mention focusing on poverty as I think it was the first session that you're going to do. What are some of the other places and things that you're going to be focusing on?
Right. So we focus on, so hunger and poverty is the first day session. And then we have education where we're going through different school systems. We go to public schools, private schools, charter schools, some non-traditional education routes that people may take, whether it be City Honors, it may be the Academy School, it may be Northland Workforce Training Center, who's a great partner with ours, Asantua and Stephen, who really Santa was actually on our board. She's their vice president of operations there, and Stephen used to serve on our board. So we're really exposing our leaders in a program to the various aspects and levels of education. We have Criminal Justice Day. We have Workforce Development, where we partner with the United Way and Evans Bank, and they really gave a holistic picture of what that looks like and the work-life solutions that the United Way is providing, which is a great program, by the way. We have Environment and Ecology Day, Arts, Culture, and Tourism, you know, all the beautiful things that Buffalo has to offer. A lot of times that we live here, we don't take advantage of.
Right,
you know,
right.
You have Irish Classical Theater and African-American Culture Center and a Color Musicians Club. We don't normally pause during our days and say, you know what, I wonder what else Buffalo has to offer that's good out here. And then, you know, depending on who your circles are and who you're involved with, you know, you may have a limited view, but Leadership Buffalo gives you the opportunity to have a full picture of what the greater Buffalo area has in store and can offer and does offer.
What's next? We're talking with Morgan Williams Bryant, the CEO of Leadership Buffalo. We're talking about a lot of different parts of their organization, including their class coming up here for the next year of their LBU is what they've. That's a rebrand of sorts, right?
Yeah. So LBU is a section, is our leadership development portion of our program that we're infusing into what we're already do.
Okay.
We still have our traditional class experience and rising leader program. And I want to make it clear, like, we're not getting away from our day sessions at all, because the other thing that we heard in our focus groups, we're really being driven by the data that we received, is that these sessions are truly impactful. Mm. We don't want to erase what has been impactful, but we do want to continue to enhance and grow the organization.
What, let's reflect then about impact from day sessions. How about for you? I mean, is there a day sign? I have a close acquaintance who went through this type of training, and I remember hearing one of the stories and how tremendously impactful was. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, even though that training came some 15 or 20 years ago, I'm sure if I brought it up, I would hear that exact story again. How about for you?
It was very impactful. And I can tell you, I went into the program thinking one thing, you know, leadership development. My master's degree is in organizational leadership. So I'm like, oh, what am
so
I?
You're
you know
this.
What? Yeah, I'm in this. You know, I am double clicking. I am excited about this. And then for my career, I've always worked in a community,
right.
Community organizations, partner with community youth programs. It's very important when you're working in any sector to build partnerships. One thing you have to understand as a leader is that you do not know everything. And that's the reason why it's important to have a team around you. But for me, I went in thinking like, well, I work with the community. So a lot of these things I already know. Ha ha, I did not. You know, there was a lot of doors that were open for me and organizations that I had never heard of, you know, namely some of the ones that I talked about today, what they were actually doing. My sister and I on Christmas and Thanksgiving would volunteer for, at the time, Meals on Wheels. So I thought about my grandfather at the time who did it. And, you know, throughout the year we would do it. But to really go in and now feed more and see the operations of what they're doing, who they serve and how they've elevated, it's absolutely amazing. I wouldn't have had that opportunity had I not gone through Leadership Buffalo. So many different insights in each day session. I think it's nine that we do throughout the year, including the not including the two retreats, that the door and the window was open for me where I'm like, aha. Mm. And it's created other opportunities for me to be able to serve the community as well.
What about graduation? I know we're looking ahead, but you just went through a graduation of the 2024 graduation, or I think that's actually upcoming.
So it's,
right?
Yes, it's upcoming.
I apologize for that. But what about the graduation event itself? It's yeah. Again, something I kind of attended with a very similar organization. What do you take from those events?
So I will say you're not completely wrong there. We had our youth graduation in June.
Okay.
We do
right.
have a youth program where we serve sophomores through seniors in high school, where we're there taking them through a year-long program and journey as well. So in June, they graduate. Where they, you know, it's a combination of everything that they've learned throughout the year. In December is the graduation for Class Experience Rising Leaders and in our Experience Buffalo program. Quickly, our Experience Buffalo program is for new executives that are moving into the city of Buffalo.
All right.
So it gives them an opportunity to create relationships with other colleagues that they normally wouldn't have the opportunity to meet, get to know the city of Buffalo, and then figure out where their niche is, you know. I have a passion here, but I'm new here. I don't know who to connect with. So introducing them to other organizations and then just the lifestyle of Buffalo. And our graduation is the culmination of those three classes.
Oh, okay.
And the experience that they've had over the year-long journey. So we have, at that time, we would have elected class chairs would be able to speak on behalf of the class and what they've experienced throughout the year. We have the families there celebrating them. So it's really a joyous time and a culmination of everything that they've done over that journey.
There's so many different elements to talk about here when it comes to Leadership Buffalo, but at the same time, I know one of the things you're working on, you just started 9-10 months ago as the CEO, but you know all the things that you've learned, like you said, you're trying to put together a collaborative experience. Kind of maybe let us know what you think might be shaping up here for Leadership Buffalo, some of the maybe the focus, how it may start to alter. I know I don't want you to necessarily give your hand too much too fast, but what about that?
Yes, I will say our State of Leadership Buffalo will take place, I believe it's February 27th, 2025 this year.
So you're going to make me wait until February?
No. Okay. I'll give you a little bit. So we've really taken a look at our mission statement, our vision statement. We've looked at our values because you want to make sure as you're listening to the community, what they need, that it aligns in the direction that we're moving in. So we've taken a look at all of those things. We have our values luncheon that's going to be coming up every May where we're celebrating individuals from the community that align with our values. They're nominated and then we go have a committee that selects them. So we'll really be looking at celebrating the things that we've been working on all year. A lot of times people say, what's happening? What's going on? But
what's not?
It was not going on, right? But you really have to take an opportunity as a leader to step back and to assess first. And you know, you can't assess and be talking all at the same time because you don't want to drop things in a puzzle or piecemeal kind of way. You want to give people a whole picture of what's going on so they can truly understand. But those are the things. LBU, which we were excited to launch recently, Leadership Buffalo University, has been on university education, but also you as the person, looking at our mission, vision, and our values, really partnerships in the community, expanding our opportunities for people to sponsor with us. So those are just some of the things that we have going on. And then we hired our new VP that I've already mentioned. We just have hired our new program manager and program and marketing manager, Jasmine Foster, who came to us from UB. And then we have Melissa Hall, who has been working with us for 8 years and has been a true anchor for all of us newcomers into LB, into the operations, and Rachel Hoffman, who is our communications and administrative specialist, who really, really sets the foundation and ties everything together for us. So those are just some of the things.
I have a feeling you're also out there with some consistency, knocking on doors, looking for new partners, right?
Absolutely. New partners, new sponsors. And what we really want is to build true partnerships. So a lot of times you hear partner and it's We're looking at what you can do, but we really want to know what we can do for you too. How can we enhance our relationship? How can we grow our relationship? I will say we've had some great conversations. We revamped our youth program this year, infusing more leadership development into that, which has been very exciting. They'll have a full day retreat on Saturday, October 26th, where they'll be with each other all day long, doing team builders, getting to know each other. Before they didn't have like a full day retreat. We'll be focusing on financial literacy skills with them, restorative justice, or that conflict resolution. We know our youth today, you know, as I said, there's been a generational shift, but we want to make sure that they're not just prepared for now, but they're prepared for the meantime and also later. We are going to be working with them on general life skills and entrepreneurship, with also still infusing some of those impactful day sessions into the things that they're learning. So our youth program is going to look quite different than it has in the past, but all great things. And currently, our goal was to have 30 youth. You know, we have to make sure that it's, you know, we keep a good balance between staff and student ratio. Right now, we probably have over 45 applications. So we're definitely going to increase our number that we serve this year. But it's been a joy to see the applications coming in. And we're currently recruiting for our adult programs, Class Experience and Rising Leaders, where we're hoping people will apply by October 18th.
Let's make sure, let's focus on that just because I know that's a date that you have in mind. Mm-hmm. What exactly, you know, people need to do, understand what might be in it for them. Why don't you make your offer on that and give some information?
Right. So if you visit our website, leadershipbuffalo.org, and go to our programs, Class Experience, Rising Leaders, you want to read through which description you feel fits you best. Again, Class Experience is for those that are already, they've been in a leadership role for a couple of years. And Rising Leaders is for those that are just stepping into a leadership role. It's their first time maybe managing or leading, whether it's a project or people. And the other thing I will say about that, when I talk about LBU, we'll have two different tracks. So they'll be together on the LBU day sessions, but Rising Leaders will have a track that's specifically geared towards new and emerging leaders, teaching them the skills that they need. And they've outlined things that they want us to cover. And then Class Experience will have their track. Well, they'll have, we'll have people that are training specifically for them and what they would like to learn, the leadership skills that they've talked about. So October 18th is the day that we really would like to receive all applications by. So visit leadershipbuffalo.org again. And then you would send those in. It is a $75 application fee. We do have financial assistance available for the whole for tuition. It's not for the whole to cover the whole tuition. And it really depends on how many people apply and the requests that we get, where we see how much financial aid is given to each individual.
It looks like, you know, Jordan or Morgan, I should say, in your time there, you've most certainly you seem to have a total grasp on all the different elements of your organization, that's for sure, which is pretty impressive because you guys do a lot. When we were talking about the organization and partners, you said you want the partnership also to be about as much about what Leadership Buffalo can do for the partner.
Absolutely.
A little bit of an elevator pitch here of sorts, but what is that? What does Leadership Buffalo do for a partner?
Many times we have people come in and they're presenting to the audience. You know, they're talking about their organizations, the projects that they're working on. But, you know, how can we partner beyond that? What are some of the things that they need more of from Leadership Buffalo? Leadership Buffalo is going to ask. We need you. We need your partnerships. We need your sponsorships, especially as we're moving into this LBU track with leadership development specifically. But what does that actually look like? One of the things that we will be doing this year is really highlighting organizations and the social media channels that we have so that people are seeing in our weekly newsletter, not just they're hearing about it, but they're also seeing the impact and they're being reminded of those organizations and the great things that they're doing. We'll be launching, you know, a newsletter We have Jasmine that's working with us now to really start to highlight some of those key partnerships and relationships. So those are the conversations that I've been having. And for those that I have spoken to, have been able to sit down with, I appreciate you so much. They've given me so much insight. The partnership and conversation has been great. And for those that I have not contacted or sat with yet, I'm coming. I am coming.
I can tell you that a couple of times I've had a chance to sit down with Morgan, I can pretty much guarantee that's the case. And you know, finally, Morgan, we kind of weave through some of these experiences mm-hmm. that are out there and some of the things that are going on in the city and some of the real issues in the city that need to be addressed. When you are in this position now, do you have a sense? I mean, I know you're by that. You're an optimistic person. You're someone who's up to challenges. Do you see these challenges being taken on and, if not solved, most certainly not hammered away at a little bit in the coming years?
I absolutely do. Anytime that you have an opportunity to partner with someone else who is doing something that you may not do or can enhance what you're doing, it's a recipe for success. Because as I said, in a leader, you can't do everything alone. I am not the end all, the be all. I don't know everything, nor will I ever claim to know everything. And I think that's a key component to leadership, being able to be authentic, but also transparent. But when you have true collaboration, partnership, and you're really focused on the vision and not you as an individual, it's a complete recipe for success. Will there always be things in this world and in this region that we have to attack? Absolutely. But the more we come together, the more we focus on the mission and the vision at hand, I think the more success we can have individually, but also collectively, and see the impact of our city. Buffalo is great. I love it. Born and raised here. I've worked here, grown my career here. My family, a lot of them is here. And the great friendship circles that I have. And the colleagues and people that I've worked with have also been great. So it's really about bringing our collaboration and passion together so that we can make a larger impact. And that's really what Leadership Buffalo is about. Our vision is really about setting a table for civic transformation by building change-driven, innovative, and socially conscious leaders.
Well, as you already heard that Morgan's coming looking for you, but if somebody wanted to save the step and just get a hold of you, what's the best way?
Please give me a call at 716-849-2626. Again, 716-849-2626. I am open and ready.
Morgan Williams Bryant is the CEO of Leadership Buffalo. As always, thanks for joining us on What's Next.
Thank you. It's always great sitting with you.
Coming up after the break, we'll speak with environmental artist Chantel Collado. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Klein Hand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We're going to be live in the studio now for the next 25 minutes with us, environmental artist Chantel Collado. Thanks for joining us, Chantel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. I want to get into your current project, but your background's intriguing because you're an environmental artist and you grew up in an area that is known and unfortunately infamously for its environment, the Niagara Falls area.
Yes, I grew up
Actually, I grew up on a little tiny island called Cuba Island. It's right on the Niagara River, but it's literally just downstream of Love Canal. Most people know what Love Canal is, at least in this region. And we could see Love Canal essentially from our house, from our front yard. I could throw a rock and probably hit the chemicals on the other side of the chain link fence. And on top of that, so that's where I was with my mother, and my father bought a plot of land and built a house about 1 mile away from the Lake Ontario Ordnance Works down in Lewiston, which holds a massive amount of uranium left over from the Manhattan Project. And so I was playing in the woods and the creek, which are my absolute best memories of a child. But I was playing in those woods and creek that was downstream of that toxic waste my whole childhood. So I had this kind of like double-edged sword.
Sure. So what came first, the interest in being an artist, or this environmental part of it that's played out for you professionally?
Absolutely being an artist. I was an artist. I feel like I came out of the womb as an artist. I don't feel like I have a choice, which is, you know, some days I wish it was the opposite. But no, I've always been an artist. And it was time and seeing the world and being able to reflect back on my home in different new ways that allowed me to really begin to understand what environmental problems we have in Western New York and Niagara County specifically.
And I'd love to spend some time maybe looking at some of your past work, and maybe we can get to that later in the program. But I want to talk about what really brought you in here today. You're working on a project, and this is fairly massive, and it's got a lot of different elements to it. In essence, it's called Play, or it's about play. Give us the background of this.
Yeah, so I came off of doing a pretty intense personal project a few years ago, Unseen, at the Birchfield Penny Art Center. And I was, right around that time, I also started having kids. And very quickly, there was an influx of toys into my house in a way that I never thought was possible. And I had zero control over it. It was being given to us from every direction. And it really, you know, I've been asked in the past what my superpower was, and my answer is a garbage picker. I'm good at garbage picking. And that really started to flourish again. I kind of took a break for it for a while, but after I had kids, I really started to notice the quantity of large plastic toys being thrown out around the city of Buffalo. And I mean, this isn't a Buffalo specific problem, but that's where I'm living. So I'd just be driving around, and I'd see playhouses, see slides, I'd see little tiny cars and all different kinds of things constantly being thrown out. And one day I took a terrifying leap and I decided to start collecting them. And I say that's terrifying because it comes with a lot of unknowns, including the quantity of space it takes up. It adds up very quickly, especially with how much is being thrown out. And so about 3.5 years ago, I started that. And it came around the time I had a conversation with my 10-year-old Max, and I was giving him art lessons at the time. And I realized children just have this beautiful creative energy that adults just usually fade out and lose over time.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And so together we came up with this idea of building a gigantic monster truck all out of big plastic toys, because we needed to make it out of something that was easily, readily available and cheap. And we figured out together that we could find a bunch of plastic toys and build this monster truck. And so he drew a sketch of the wheel of that truck, which is now the piece of working, one piece I'm working called the Big Wheel. And it's a bunch of little tykes, those red and yellow cars that most of the audience probably knows or has in their backyard or their neighbor does. And if you put them all together, it creates a perfect wheel. And so I'm building this big wheel, which may eventually become part of the monster truck. We'll figure that out down the road. But in my process of collecting and now starting to build a bunch of different various large-scale sculptures, I realized I wanted to continue harnessing the imaginations of young kids so that A, I could give them an experience that hopefully pushes their awareness of environmental problems and waste and excessive consumerism, while also feeding creativity towards my art. And so I, not only am I building these big sculptures, I am also, I've created a series of workshops called the Play Workshops. They're being hosted by the Birchfield Penny Art Center in their beautiful classroom spaces. And I've partnered with WEDI, Westminster Economic Development Initiative, with their after-school program, Energy and Fly. All the kids are first through eighth grade, so they're a phenomenal age group. I love it because they're all diverse in age, so they approach the challenges I give them very differently.
Challenges? What are challenges?
So how to take materials that aren't typically used to make art. So I've been giving them not the large plastic toys I've been collecting, but I've also collected bins and bins and bins of smaller plastic toys. And we've disassembled them, and they've now become more like building blocks for the kids. So they can use them in a way that's a more open, creative way.
And are they taking different approaches to it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So the first few workshops we've already done, and they were a little bit more open play. Although, for example, the first workshop, I gave them each a small bird, which was these little vintage birds that somebody gave me a box of them and said, I can't even sell these in my market. Just take them.
Okay.
So again, a discarded box of old birds. they look almost realistic. They're vintage. They all got to pick their own bird. They gave their birds a name. And then I said, if you've ever seen the classrooms at the Birchfield Penny, they're relatively new, but they're beautifully designed. Very unusual space with all kinds of levels and cubbies. And I wanted them to react to the room they were in, almost like a site-specific work.
Okay.
And the kids, I said, I want you to build a playground for your bird. So that was kind of like a, well, that's odd. Because, like, we don't normally think about playgrounds for birds. We think about playgrounds for us. Like,
right.
Does a bird need a slide? I don't know. Do they need a slide? What kinds of fun, interesting things do birds would make it fun for a bird that has a completely different way of moving than we do? And then those were really just like loosen them up, start getting them to think. And then going forward for the next three workshops, we're going to focus a little bit more on the kids' personal backgrounds. They're all immigrants and refugees from various countries and territories. There's 21 kids in total. They come from Somalia, Sudan, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Puerto Rico. So I feel really honored to be able to work with this group of kids, because I've been able to do a lot of traveling and I've lived in a couple different countries myself, and I feel like we can learn so much from people who are from other cultures.
Right, and hear kids, like kids who come from that type of background, which, you know, is a background that so few of us can really have any type of empathy for. I guess you can have empathy, but really have any kind of understanding of it. Do you sense that them bringing a whole different perspective that maybe, again, is opening up your eyes a little bit as well?
Absolutely. They're, you know, it's hard to say, you know, the specifics at this point.
Right.
Because we still have three more, which I feel like are going to kind of get a little bit deeper with them in that sense. But you know what's amazing about play? And I guess maybe this isn't answering the question, but play is a form of communication just as much as speaking is. And so, I mean, yes, these kids do all speak English on different levels. But the act of being in this environment where the communication is more of a physical task than a verbal task allows everyone to kind of be on the same playing field, whether they're 5 years old or 12, or, you know, I've even gotten the teachers and the adults in the room involved where they can't help themselves because it's too much fun.
Right.
I say
that's interesting, though, the idea that there's a way to communicate universally in a situation where people are on different levels of being able to communicate in English.
Yeah,
right?
Different levels of communicating in English, or just totally different backgrounds, you know, different things they wear, different things they probably eat, which we're going to get into cultural foods, which I think will be interesting for one of the later workshops. And they're also going to be doing self-portraits, which I actually hope to further that. We're going to be using all kinds of different, for that self-portrait, that's actually this week we're doing that workshop. I've collected all kinds of various objects, like a piano off the side of the road, and disassembled it.
Wow.
So I'm going to be giving them objects that they probably have no clue. Like, I wouldn't even, if somebody put it in front of me and I didn't know what it was, you know, I didn't know it came from, I wouldn't know what these objects were. So it's a way to get people out of their shells and, you know, to think. And that's kind of what I've been trying to bring into my practice in my studio more so. You know, you work, you make art, and you do this for so long that you start to get in routines and repetitions, and throwing together a bunch of objects and kind of walking in to my studio now without a specific goal, which I'm not saying I do that every day, but I did it for about a year, and it allowed me to be creative in a much broader way. And I want to spread that ability and allow, you know, that essence to continue.
We are talking with Chantal Collado, environmental artist with us on What's Next. And, you know, Chantal, you brought a couple of silent partners here with you this morning in the studio. I know you want to mention them.
Yes. I have two amazing students here from UB. They've been working with me on a storytelling and marketing project with their professor, Nicole Zeftel. I have Martin Kim and Sanskar Narang. And they are actually the ones who reached out and set up this interview.
Right.
And they've been doing all kinds of things, helping push me forward. I am a small business. Artists are small businesses. We have to do all of the things that any other company would need to do. And the program that they're working on through UB is specifically helping me and it's in my business, which is phenomenal.
Nice.
I've been really fortunate with, you know, first of all, I think part of it is like play is just so fun, and big colorful plastic things, regardless, it just makes people's eyes light up. And if you know anything about my past work, some of it's very dark. So this is like a complete extreme in the sense of like if you have people have instant joy when they start to see some of it. So I've been, you know, Birchfield Penny's been super supportive when I approached them about the idea. Weedy was immediately excited to work on it with the kids. And then I also have been lucky enough to have Trusted Gives, which was another sponsor for the workshops. I got a couple grants through Art Services Initiative, that are New York State funded grants with the Creative Impact Fund that have also funded some of these projects.
You reference as you.
Yes, I know that's a lot of things, but that just shows. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I know, but the collaboration that has to go into making
things.
Oh, it's
huge. Kind of, yeah. I mean,
especially since, like you said,
all.
You're a small business.
Absolutely, and it takes a lot of people who have to give their own personal time and investment to make any of this happen, really. So I feel fortunate.
And Chantal, as you're answering, you also referenced your previous work that may be a little bit darker. I think you'd use the word. And one of the pieces I want to just make a mention to, because Mount Seacoast.
Yes.
This is interesting because I think any of us who have driven through Niagara Falls have seen Mount Seacoast, but we have no idea what it is.
Yes. So Mount Seacoast. So it's actually called Seacoast International. It's a landfill along the 190 when you're driving. So if you're driving over the North Grand Island Bridge and you're looking off into the landscape, the horizon line is now a landfill. which
a huge green pyramid, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, a huge green man. Yeah, it's a very unusual landform. And if you, once you realize what it is, you realize very quickly it doesn't look natural at all.
Right.
They've actually recently started putting solar panels on top of it, which I'm not sure. I have mixed feelings about, but regardless, the high school that I went to was LaSalle High School. It's no longer there. It's where Walmart currently is in Niagara Falls. But that was literally right across the highway from the Secos International. We, as locals, have for decades have called it Mount Secos because it's just this gigantic mountain that keeps growing. People joke that it could become ski slopes or some kind of resort in the which.
Right.
So anyways, but the landfill really takes up a ginormous plot of land in Niagara County. It's the highest elevation in Niagara County. It's larger than the falls themselves. I mean, it's just gigantic, and you can see it from so many vantage points. So I went to a high school that's no longer there, but when they knocked LaSalle High School down and built a new high school, the best place that they could figure out where to put it was on the other side of the landfill. So the school still has a large, expansive view of the landfill. That's just one of hundreds of waste sites around Western New York and Niagara Falls. And so a lot of them you can't necessarily see. That is definitely one of the ones that is more easily seen.
Right.
There is Tift Nature Preserve, similar landfill mounds, if you've ever noticed when you're driving on Route 5.
That's true. You're right.
Those, I find it interesting. They call it a nature preserve because they're really trying to reclaim nature there in that site. But next time you're walking through the fields on those mounds, just think about, like, you're standing on what used to be a municipal landfill.
What are the reactions to your work, your environmental art? I'm interested in that.
Oh, my. So many different. It depends on probably the context. If I'm trying to pitch a work of art that is speaking to the darker underbelly of the West, of Western New York's toxicity, I have been outright rejected by various institutions who claim that they've worked really hard to be where they're at, and there's no way they would ever want to have something like my work in their institution.
Interesting.
But having said that, for the majority, people realize that environmental problems are a huge problem. Have created a huge impact on our environment here and the people who live here. And so regardless of whether they realize how wide scale the problem is, they want to help keep that story going. Whether they feel like Love Canal is a legacy story or if they feel like I do, which it is an ongoing problem, and all of these other sites, you know, people generally are very supportive, and they, you know, it's hard because it makes people feel something, and that feeling is usually very strong and emotional and personal. So in a sense, the work generally is effective in that sense, but it can be hard. I mean, it can be hard to be the artist living in the shadow of making that work because it can be very dark.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, in part, I've transitioned more recently to a medium that is more colorful, a medium that is just inherently more fun.
Chantal Collado with us here in our final minutes of What's Next, environmental artist, and I appreciate you kind of going back, but let's make sure from a call to action of sorts right now, where you're at, and what do you want to highlight here about your current work? Like you said, it's a little brighter right now talking about play, but at the same time, there's meaning behind it as well.
Absolutely. I would say that just to give a sense for the anyone listening, I've collected probably 200 cubic meters of trash off the side of the road around Buffalo. I have 1,000 square foot studio right now that if I laid it all out, it would... I couldn't lay it all out. People ask me where I store the stuff. It's becoming a problem because there's so much of it. And I guess in part, I would just ask people to think about, you know, next time you want to get your kid a Cozy Coupe Little Tykes car, go on Facebook Marketplace. Just ask your friends. I bet you somebody is giving one away. Or look for one on the side of the road. Or email me because I will give you one. I have probably collected 75 of those cars over the last couple of years. And they're just like an endless supply. If anyone is looking to get rid of toys and you're about to put it onto the curb, email me. I'll come pick it up.
What's your email?
ChantelColato@yahoo.com. I am specifically currently looking for green turtle sandboxes.
Oh, I had one, but it's...
Oh!
I left it out the side of the road and somebody
took
it. Yeah.
Exactly.
I cleaned it up.
That's the thing. It's like everybody's had these.
Yes.
You know, it's so universal. Everyone can relate to it for a different reason, whether you're a grandparent or a child or a parent. And then also just keep in mind, I am going to be doing some toy giveaways to nice, beautiful, clean toys that did come from the side of the road, but very, very clean and very functional. So leading up to Christmas, I'll be doing some toy giveaways because I really want to encourage people to reuse and reuse and reuse.
Well, Chantel, I appreciate you coming in and sharing with us. Looking forward to see how this all plays out, and we can talk again. How does that sound?
I love that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Chantel Collado with us, environmental artist on What's Next. And of course, our first half, we were talking with Morgan Williams Bryant here on What's Next as well. This has been What's Next on WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.